Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome to our draft preview special, part one. We've got shows all weekend long today, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We're excited to have you on with us today talking the NFL draft. I'm your host, Daniel Moglio, and with me is the Reverend Ralph Mancini. Reverend, how's it going today?
Hey, what's up, Sportsmaster? After all those 40-yard dashes, after all those interviews, the day has finally arrived when these players find out their fate.
I mean, I am jacked up. I am pumped up. It's finally here. No more, 30 days away, 20 days away, 10 days away. We're talking 2.5 hours away from the draft.
It's Christmas time, baby.
And it's 3 days this year. How great is that? I mean, I don't understand people who don't like this. If Santa Claus said, can you have Christmas 3 days? I'd say, heck yeah, bring it on. Let's do it 3 days.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think we got the first round going on today, Rev. We got a packed show. A bunch of guests coming on from the world of football. We got coaches, we have players, we have people from the media. Just to throw some names out there, we're having the Reverend, another Reverend, Houston Nutt, joining us today from Ole Miss to talk about his guys, as well as Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern, Bill Lynch from the University of Indiana will also be calling in. And we also have Trevell Gaines, one of the workout guys who's been working out with a lot of the top prospects for this 2010 NFL draft. In terms of players, we're having Kyle Wilson on, an NFL draft Bible favorite, one of the top corners in this draft. We have Jonathan Dwyer from Georgia Tech, wide receiver Carlton Mitchell from South Florida. A couple other guys we're hoping to get on. We won't throw the names out there. Maybe we'll surprise you with a couple of guests, maybe even a first-round pick or two joining us today. Also, Dari Noka of ESPN, who will be having his own draft coverage later on today on ESPN News. Rev, we left the slot open at the top. We thought, hey, we're going to talk about the big trade that happens during the day to start off the show before the guests get rolling. And then what happened? No big trade. The Rams still have the first overall pick. Big Ben Roethlisberger is still a Pittsburgh Steeler. What's your take on the non-movement of the NFL draft so far?
Well, of course, the name that people are looking for, that they want to hear about, is Ben Roethlisberger. And I think the Steelers definitely want to move him. What you're hearing is they're looking for a top 10 pick in the first round in return, and that's logical. I mean, this guy's won 2 Super Bowls. Those types of quarterbacks don't grow on trees. It would make perfect sense for a team like the San Francisco 49ers to make that trade. They don't have a top 10 pick, but they do have 2 picks in the first round. And, they have a supporting cast. If they bring in Ben Roethlisberger, they have a supporting cast to allow him to come in and win as soon as he comes in and plays for the team. I'm surprised. We haven't had any movement today.
So ultimately, do you think Big Ben will remain a Pittsburgh Steeler? If you had to guess, if you had to gander, yes or no, yay or nay, which way would you go?
I'd probably say more no than yes at this point, just because the Rams haven't showed any interest and the Buffalo Bills haven't shown any interest so far.
So you mean no, that he'll be traded?
So no, yes. No, that he'll be traded.
So
yes.
By Sunday morning, he'll still be part of the Steelers franchise.
I would say it's still 60-40 that he stays.
I'd have to agree, Rev. I mean, I think it would be hard-pressed for me to think you would trade a guy who's just won 2 Super Bowls. I mean, I get the reason why. I get the off-the-field stuff. But look at a franchise like the Eagles, who really – it wasn't easy trading McNabb. And this has been a couple of years coming in terms of the rumors and the potential of him being dealt, and still it was tough. It was tough to actually pull the trigger, and they finally did it this year. And the reason they did was because he hasn't been able to take him to the promised land.
Mm-hmm.
Franchises, how many teams were this close and were a quarterback away from winning it? The Steelers got a guy that's won it twice. Can you really get rid of him for draft picks, especially at this age? And what are you going to do? You're going to bring in Jimmy Clausen? You're going to hand it over to who? Dennis Dixon with Leftwich, holding the fort down. It's risky to do that. I don't see Super Bowls in that future.
Well, the only thing is that, at least Philly knew that they did have a guy that they believe is their quarterback of the future on their roster. They've been able to groom him for a couple of years now. So, but the Steelers, on the other hand, I mean, they have a very unproven Dennis Dixon, and they have Byron Leftwich, who, you know, let's face it, you know, if he could last 4 or 5 games, he'd be shocked, because the guy's always going down with some type of injury. And when it comes to being injury prone, I mean, Charlie Batch is even worse. So, yeah, I mean, it shocks me that, you know, Pittsburgh would actually put him out in the market. You know, look, I understand they did the same thing with Santonio Holmes, and I applaud them for wanting to make a point to the rest of their players, you know, using Big Ben as an example. Well, let's face it, you know, if you want to win, I mean, you need that quarterback. That's the most important position, and it is the hardest position to fill. It is the hardest position to draft for, bar none. And so, I don't know. I would hang on to Big Ben Roethlisberger. He wasn't convicted of a crime. He does need to change his ways, but he's only 28 years old, and he already has 2 Super Bowls under his belt.
All right, let's go to the top of the draft, Rev, and those first, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 picks. Where do you think there could be some potential, you know, upheaval, let's say? Where could we find somebody going, a surprise-type pick? Throw one out there for me.
A surprise type pick. Well, I would say, well, at this point, you know, Trent Williams is a guy who's very popular, who's been gaining popularity in the past few days. You know,
quite, yeah, and I noticed in your mock draft we just posted on the site today, you had Williams going 4 as the number one tackle ahead of Russell Okung.
Well, yeah, well, it's not because I think Trent Williams is a better player. It just seems to be. It seems that a lot of teams are enamored with Williams' athleticism, and they like the way he moves. They like his agility, his fluidity. But I still think Okung is the best tackle out there. He's the most solid tackle. He's the strongest guy out there. He's got the long arms, everything that you would want in a left tackle. Whereas Williams, he may be a little bit more athletic, but I'm not convinced that he is a left tackle. I think he's very versatile, obviously. He could be right tackle. You could even put him at center if you want. But, again, I've seen him play left tackle, and he hasn't really convinced me that he could succeed in that type of position, at least not in his first year. Maybe he's somebody you have to groom. He needs to work on his technique. So, but, again, a lot of these teams, they love the athleticism. They love to see a big 300-pound guy that can move.
Yeah, good stuff, Rev. Interesting there to see where it goes. Once again, I know this is something we've talked about, but maybe for listeners, first-time listeners to our show, St. Louis Rams, Sam Bradford, franchise quarterback, you think that's the right move, or would Sue be the safer, more prudent pick?
I definitely think that Sue is the more prudent pick. As I said before, you know, quarterback is a risky, risky position. You know, you never really know. I mean, unless you think a quarterback is going to be hands down a superstar and has already proven at the collegiate level that he could be that type of player, that Dan Marino type, that John Elway type. You know, I don't take him number one overall if I'm not convinced he could be that type of potential Hall of Famer. So I would go with Sue all the way here. I think there's less of a risk involved with picking Sue.
Yeah, Rev, I'd have to agree. How about the people that like McCoy? I mean, there's some people out there that have McCoy rated ahead of Sue. Is there any chance, any scenario where you could see McCoy actually leapfrog Sue in this draft? And is there any scenario where you would kind of think McCoy is better than Sue?
The only scenario I see where McCoy goes ahead of Sue is if Detroit trades out of their second slot, because from what I'm hearing, Detroit, and most importantly, the Detroit Lions fans really, really want Sue. They've been campaigning for him. So that's the only way I see McCoy going over Sue, is if Detroit trades down.
Yeah, I agree, Rev. I don't see it happening. And either way, I really don't see, you know, I don't want to be too down on McCoy, but I really don't see how you make a justification for taking Sue over McCoy. To me, I just don't see that being a reality. You know, I think Sue is a better player. I get, you know, what McCoy's strengths are and his quickness, and he's more of the quote-unquote, like, penetrating type guy. But, you know, Sue could do that too. It's not as if Sue can't do that. And he complements it with being stronger and stouter against the run.
Well, bottom line, who is the more dominant guy? I mean, I think far and away, you know, Sue is a guy who could actually take over games. And that's saying something when you play defensive tackle. Look, I've seen flashes of greatness from McCoy. He is quick. He is that one-gap penetrator. But I've never seen him, you know, literally take over a game like Sue has.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with you, Rev. How about Eric Berry He's an interesting guy that, you know, from the beginning of the draft, we've all had as a consensus top five player in this draft. Sometimes he does fall into the top five. Sometimes he doesn't. What range do you see he could go to? And is he a guy that maybe teams might trade up for if he does slip a spot or two?
Well, I think he's definitely a top 10 guy. I think he should be a top five guy. If I'm the Kansas City Chiefs and I have a defense that really has a lot of holes, especially over in the back end and the secondary, I think you bring in Eric Berry. He could be your Ed Reed eventually, maybe even in his first year. He's that good. So, you know, you're talking about safe picks. You know, Eric Berry and Nkamakan Sue are two guys that I think are the safest out of all these picks, out of all these guys that are going to be available in this upcoming draft.
Yeah, Rev, I agree with you, man. I think those are the two safest picks, and they're both guys, you know, it's not that they're just safe. They have high ceilings as well, but I think they have the highest floor, and I think that's something that gets overlooked all too often on draft day. You know what I mean? Right now, I was talking with somebody yesterday, and we're talking about the mock draft that we did on Sunday, and, you know, some people kind of surprised, oh, how could McCoy fall to 7, as if that's, you know, some unbelievable thing. And now all these guys who are projected to be in the top 10, they all look like surefire guys. They can't miss. But as we know, year in and year out, there are several guys, more than one, sometimes half the guys in the top 10, as many as 5 out of 10, end up being misses where they don't really pan out to be big-time players. And, you know, as they say, hindsight is 20/20. But I think, you know, undervalued is the guys that have the high floor that really you feel, I don't see how this guy's going to bust. If there's a guy like that, and to me the top two guys are Sue and Eric Berry, I don't see how either one of those guys could end up being a bust, and I don't, you know, I would have trouble passing them up.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, I mean, at the very worst, Ndamukong Suh could be what? A very, very solid player, one of the top three or four players at his position. That's at worst. That's worst case scenario.
Right, that's worst case scenario, and there's still the upside, the best case scenario. Rev, something we talked about a lot, how many tackles do you see going in the top 10? How many tackles do you see going in the first round?
Well, in the top 10, I definitely see three of them going in the top 10. I have Trent Williams going to Washington. I have Okung going to Seattle. And I have Brian Bulaga going to Buffalo. You know, as far as the entire first round, it gets a little tougher there. But I would say that you're looking at about, I'd say at least 6 or 7 tackles that are going to go in the first round. You know, you're taking a look at guys like Charles Brown, I think, he's definitely going to go. The kid out of Rutgers is going to go as well. So I would say 6 or 7. And as we all know, if you want a quality tackle, especially a guy who could play left tackle, you better get him early. As we've seen, I remember, when was it, 2 years ago, I think about 7 or 8 tackles went in the first round. So I think that you're always going to see the best tackles and the best cornerbacks are always going to go early.
Yeah, Rev, I mean, it's a key position, and it's something where there's so much value there. Who are some of the guys that maybe, you know, not the top guys, but who are some of those guys at the bottom of that first round in terms of the tackle position that are borderline first guys that you think might be able to sneak in? You know, are we talking guys like a Bruce Campbell, a Roger Saffold, Vladimir Dukas, I know, is another guy you like? Kind of compare and contrast those players.
Well, Vladimir Dukas is a guy who's very raw, but he's massive. I mean, the guy's huge. He's very, very strong. He has unlimited upside. But I saw him play a little bit of tackle in the Senior Bowl, and he doesn't – well, he's definitely not ready to play left tackle. And I'm not so sure he could be a right tackle right off the bat. But I think if a team like the Minnesota Vikings plugs him in as a guard, I think this guy could be a monster. I think this guy's going to open up some gaping holes. I think he's a guy who can move people off the ball. As far as Roger Saffold goes, you're talking about a guy that, you know, might not be as good as Russell Okung, but, you know, a guy who's very athletic, very fluid, has great ankle flexion, moves from side to side. So here's a guy that you project to be a left tackle down the road. Not too many guys at his size that can move the way he does. And then, you know, you got Selfish Capers, who I think is another very athletic guy, an ex-tight end who moves very well. I think he goes in the second round. And I also have, in my latest mock, I have Bruce Campbell falling to the second round. Look, a lot of people were impressed by his athleticism, by his numbers at the combine. He's a tremendous athlete. I mean, the guy is built like Adonis, but the guy, his technique is just off. And, you know, a lot of times he's not quick out of his stance. People run around him. So he's a guy who, again, is very raw. He needs a lot of work, but he's a guy that you want on your team because you could coach him up and you could do a lot with him. But I just, you know, if you're taking somebody in the first round, you want it to be an instant impact guy. I think Bruce Campbell is a guy that might have to be groomed maybe for about a season, or a guy that you might want to move to right tackle initially and let him prove to you that he's worthy of being a left tackle that could protect the blind side.
And how about the interior of the line? You know, there's not a whole lot of names here, and that's not atypical of the NFL draft. You usually don't see a lot of guys in terms of centers, guards going in the first round or very high in the first round. But this year there are a couple of guys, two names, Mike Iupati out of Idaho, a guard, and center Marquise Pouncey out of Florida. Pouncey can also play a little guard as well, so some teams might like him there. How high could they go? And, Rev, how much are they helped by the fact that, unlike a lot of these other positions, there really isn't a lot of depth at those two spots? I think in both positions you can make a case that there's a huge, huge fall-off from the number one guy. So because of that, do you think teams might even reach for them knowing that, hey, if I don't get Iupati or if I don't get Pouncey, that next guy, I really don't know if that guy can start next year.
Yeah, I think you brought up Iupati and Pouncey. I think both of these guys could be top 20 picks. I actually have Iupati going to the San Francisco 49ers with their 13th pick overall, and I have Pouncey going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, Iupati is just a guy who's got extremely long arms. You know, I wouldn't even move him to tackle. I would leave him at guard where he just utterly dominate his opponents. He's a guy who just manhandle people. He moves people off the ball, and he's an athletic guy as well. And the thing that you like about him, you know, if you watch them over the past couple of years, here's a guy who stays on his feet, great balance. And then you talk about Marquise Pouncey, a big and a very mobile guy. And I think what stands out with Pouncey is his mobility. He has that ability to go out to the second level and pull block and do all those things, maybe even similar to, you know, the way Kevin Mawai used to do things. And he's still in the league. But, yeah, it could be a guy similar to Kevin Mawai down the road. And then another guy, you know, I think if you look at the second round that I like a lot is Mike Johnson out of Alabama. I know he can go in the second round, can go in the third round, but I think he's another tough guy, a guy that can instantly improve your running game from the get-go.
All right, Rev, I just want to remind the listeners out there, you're listening to the NFL Draft Bibles Draft Preview Show here on All Access Football Radio. Don't forget, go to NFLDraftBible.com. You can still get your NFL Draft Guide. That's right. It's still not too late, folks. I know it's only about 2 hours and 10 minutes until draft time, but it's still not too late. You can order it right now. Get the PDF. You will be able to download it onto your computer and have it ready for round number one, for pick number one. But right now, we're going to take it away to our next guest, and that is Trevell Gaines from Gaines Performance. He's one of the best in the business when it comes to working out with the players and getting them ready for the combine as well as the NFL. Trevell, thanks a lot for joining us on this big weekend for these players as well as yourself.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, Trevell. I'm Dan. I'm hosting, and with me is the Reverend Ralph Mancini. We're very happy to have you on with us. And Trevell, I'd like to talk to you about a couple of your guys. Let's start off with Brian Price out of UCLA, the big kid who many people think will be a first-round pick.
Yes, sir. Oh, man, well, you know, Brian's a great kid, and I think the first thing you got to think when it comes to Brian Price is his background, man. Very, very, very tough. He grew up in South Central L.A. He had to watch two of his brothers, you know, were murdered, and he rose through all of that and ended up going to the hometown of UCLA, and just the best personality, just the best kid to be around, just extremely hard worker and really determined to be the best he could be. And, you know, he worked really hard. He had a little bit of a nagging injury with his hip while he was training with us. So he wasn't full go at the combine, but he was able to put up 34 reps of 225 on the bench, which was one of the best for the D-tackle position.
Now, let me ask you about one more big guy, and that's Lamar Houston, who also has a very great personality. I met Lamar the other day in New York. Tell us a little bit about his athletic ability and ability to play defensive end and defensive tackle.
Yeah, Lamar's awesome. He totally lit up the combine. He weighed in at 305, ran a 4.84 40, I believe, which was the fastest time for anybody over 300 pounds. So I was very excited about that. Tested very well. He's really good at positions. I mean, he has some of the quickest feet, and he's far the most, one of the most athletic kids that I've ever trained. And he's a kid that's definitely going to – he's just so athletic, and he caused so much havoc. So he's so strong, and he's so fast and so quick and so agile that, you know, he can pose a lot of problems lining up in pretty much any shade or any technique on the defensive line.
Yeah, Travell, could you also expound on Lamar Houston a little bit more?
Yeah.
One of the knocks against him was that he needed to improve his lower body strength. You know, what did you do to sort of improve him and make him a better athlete?
Right, and that's a great one. I know when he first got to us, that was a huge concern coming from his agent. And, you know, he weighed in at 294 when he first got there, and we concentrated and focused on doing a lot of squats and lunges and plyometric and different things to build his lower body strength and help with his explosiveness. And I think, you know, when he first arrived there, he was around a 5'5", 5'1", sub 5'40". And I think adding that the lower body explosiveness to what he was doing definitely helped him out by putting on the size and the weight lower body and by having him run a 4.84 at the combine.
And you're listening to the NFL Draft Bibles Draft Preview Show. On the line is Travell Gaines from Performance Gains, where a lot of these top players have been training for the NFL Draft. Coming up next on the hotline, we have Coach Houston Nutt. Rev, you have anything? You have a couple more for Travell before
sure.
We let him go?
Yeah, Travell, what are some of the most common mistakes that athletes make in, you know, deciding what to eat in their daily diets and or even the way that they work out from day to day? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think some of the most common mistakes are first of all, when you have to let your muscles rest. So you can't just go in and do bench press every day or squats every day. You have to give your body a proper recovery and proper regeneration. So you got to make sure you foam roll your body out and do all the things that's proper as far as the nutrition and getting in protein to help rebuild and replenish those that you just tore down. And as far as eating and diet-wise, make sure you just got a meal plan and diet that's very protein heavy and that'll help you replenish all your muscles after you're done working out.
All right, Travell, that is Travell Gaines. Thank you very much for joining us from Performance Gaines. Let me just throw some names out there. We got Brian Price, Rashad Jones, LeGarrette Blount, Dominique Franks, Donovan Warren, Ryan Matthews, a potential first-round pick, Ed Dixon, Parrish Cox. The list goes on and on. What a class, and good luck in the future, Travell. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Travell Gaines from Performance Gaines. As we mentioned, we've had a lot of the guys on throughout the year. He does a great job getting these players ready for the combine and ready for the NFL draft, as do some of the great coaches around college football. And joining us next is one of those guys. That's Houston Nutt from the Ole Miss Rebels. Hey, Coach Nutt, thank you for waiting on the line. It's a pleasure to have you on. How's everything?
It's going good. Appreciate y'all having me.
Great. Well, hey, you got a great group of guys coming out of Ole Miss, so it's a pleasure to have you on. Let me start off with Dexter McCluster. And, you know, for the people out there, the listeners who are just NFL fans and really haven't seen Dexter play much, let him in a little bit on all he can do in terms of, you know, being a runner, a receiver, and a special teams player.
Yeah, he can do a lot of things for a team. First of all, you want him in your locker room. You want him in your weight room. It's his personality. He's very unselfish. He's a good teammate. But the thing that he can do, though, he's so quick. He can be a receiver. He can play tailback. He can be a third down back, an inside slot guy. He runs. He can run screens, reverses. He can be a punt returner, a kick returner. There's so many things he can do to change a game, and that's what, to me, makes him special.
Yeah, Houston. Another guy I wanted to ask you about is Shea Hodge. You know, here's a guy who's underpublicized, but when you watch him play, he's one tough receiver. He makes a lot of difficult catches. Do you see him being an early success in the NFL, kind of like Mike Wallace has been with the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I do. I tell you what, he's the first 1,000-yard receiver at Ole Miss. Strong hands, one of our best cover catchers. And what I mean by that is he can catch in a crowd. Some receivers can't do that. The crowd or people hanging on his back doesn't bother him. Very strong. Became a much better route runner by his senior year. So I think if he gets with the right team, I think you'll see this guy just get better and better and better. And I look for him to have a very good career.
Yeah, also another guy that impressed me a whole heck of a lot was the offensive lineman, John Jerry. I remember that one game versus Tennessee. He was just obliterating opposing linebackers. Do you think he's athletic enough to be a right tackle at the next level?
Without question. He can be a right tackle, a right guard. This guy understands schemes, blocking schemes. He loves football. He loves practice. I just think he's a guy that, especially these last 2 weeks, I've had so many calls from NFL teams about John, and they love how smart he is. They put him on the board, and he's just been outstanding for us the last 2 years.
Hey, Coach, let me ask you about quarterback Jevon Snead. And we talked about him before a couple weeks ago, and everyone knows about his athletic ability, his upside, his great arm. What does he need to do to kind of, you know, put the wrapping on his game, you know, smooth out the rough edges in his game and reach that full potential?
I think the biggest thing, and I think Jevon knows this, that, you know, as long as he plays within himself and doesn't force it, so I think sometimes, especially his last year here with us, this last season, he felt like he had to make plays. We didn't have Michael Wallace. We didn't have a Michael Orr. So he felt like he had to do more. And so when he did that, he forced some things, got himself in some trouble early on. But I tell you what, there's a lot of good plays that he's made for us. And we've won 18 games these last 2 years. He was one of the big reasons for that. He has a strong arm. He's shown that he can be very accurate. And I think when he just plays within the system, let the kind of game come to him, he's outstanding. And I'm very anxious to see which team goes with Jevon.
Yeah, also, Coach, can you set the record straight on the very talented defensive end, Greg Hardy? You're hearing a lot about him being a strange guy, a strange personality who doesn't always like to work hard. Can this guy be a team player?
Absolutely. I think if you look at the last year, he was never late for us. He really became an outstanding teammate. A lot of guys who were seniors would never try to come back after surgery. He came back after surgery just so he could play in the bowl game. So I just feel like he's grown a bunch. I think he's matured, and especially this past year, this guy can rush the passer. This guy is one of the most talented athletes. I've just talked to several NFL coaches today, in fact, about Greg and about how good he can be. So I'm there's a guy that really has some basketball moves that can do a lot of things on the football field. He probably could play an outside linebacker. When we first got him, he was 242 pounds, and then by the time he left, he was 280. So his weight's gone up, and just kind of depends on what the team, what do they want to do with him, because he's so talented, and people have a hard time blocking him now.
All right, Coach, before we let you go, and this is Coach Houston Nutt of the Ole Miss Rebels. Coach, how much of the draft are you planning on watching? How much time do you have to kind of get away from your duties to watch some of the festivities this weekend?
Oh, when I leave this office here, I'll be watching every announcement, every play. I love watching it. I always do it every year, and always fun to see who decides on who, you know.
All right, great. Thank you very much, Coach, for joining us, and we want to wish you luck and all the Rebels luck in this 2010 NFL draft.
Hey, I appreciate that. Thank you all for having me, guys.
Anytime, Coach. It was a pleasure.
Okay, thank you.
All right, that was Head Coach Reverend Houston Nutt here with us today on this draft show. With me is the Reverend Ralph Mancini. As we continue to move on, we have another head coach joining us on the line from the University of Northwestern. And also joining us is one of the top players coming out of the Big Ten school. That is Mr. Corey Wooten, defensive end. Coach Fitzgerald, how are you? And Corey as well. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Great to be on. Hey, Corey, how's everything in Jersey, big guy?
It's good. I actually just landed. Yeah.
Hey, Corey, Coach Fitzgerald called in about 3-4 minutes early. Is that typical of Coach?
Oh, definitely. You know, he's always on time. Well, not on time, so I'd say he's always early. So, yeah, I just got off my plane, so that's why I wasn't able to beat him to it, you know.
I hope you had a good flight there, Corey. Coach, let's start with Corey here and tell us a little bit about this big defensive end coming out of Northwestern. What are NFL teams asking about? And you think he's a great fit in either scheme in terms of being a 3-4 guy or a 4-3 guy?
Well, he's a dynamic playmaker. You know, he's a young man that came to our program. I don't know, Corey, what were you, 204 pounds when you reported on
him? Something like that.
He's a shadow of himself now, and he's, you know, I don't know what he's at now. He played a little over 280 this year, and, you know, he can make plays in all aspects. He's a guy that can fill up the stat sheet at the defensive end position. He gets sacks. He gets quarterback hits and hurries. He can drop off into the flat. He's got multiple interceptions in his career. Obviously, at 6'7", can knock the ball down, but all those things can be evaluated and seen on video. I think what's more impressive about Corey is his ability to persevere and overcome adversity. You know, a young man that had just a tremendous junior year, one that may have led, who knows. You know, Corey and I had conversations with his family about maybe entering the draft early, but unfortunately was injured and came back from that. And when a young man with the expectations and the notoriety and the lofty draft grades that he had, he battled back and didn't bat an eye, and we had to hold him back from practice and camp. So he's a tough guy. And he's a great leader, member of our leadership council, a captain, and, you know, he was kind of the straw that stirred the drink for our defense here for a couple of years as we won 17 games, and he's a major, major part of it.
Hey, this question is for Corey. Just how much did that knee of the right knee hinder you this past season? You know, what were some of the things that you were able to do during your standout season in 2008 that you couldn't execute as a senior?
I think the biggest thing was just my burst off the edge and just my in and out of my cuts and things like that, like changes direction, you know, because I didn't have as much leg strength as I did in the prior year. So that was the biggest thing for me was just my burst and explosiveness. And ever since the season ended, that's all I've been, you know, garnering my weight training and running training towards that, getting that burst back and everything.
See,
Daniel, hey, Corey, how close?
At least Corey had that in 2008. See, when I came out and I got my leg broken, I kept saying, you know, I'll get my purse back. But you know what? I never had it on video. So.
You couldn't go back to the old tape, Coach, to show the burst?
It has to be there to be able to show it. So, no.
On YouTube there.
Hey, Corey, I know something Coach does have, and that's a Big Ten championship ring. Did he show that off at all to the guys?
I've actually never seen it before. I've seen the trophies and everything. But, yeah, that's something I always wanted to accomplish in my career there. But, you know, unfortunately, we came up short. But I definitely feel in the future, you know, Coach Pitts has the program going in the right direction. I believe they will definitely bring some Big Ten titles back to Northwestern.
Oh, no doubt about that. Definitely headed in the right direction. I thought you guys really had that bowl win there against Auburn. Corey, you know, Ralph asked you about your knee a little bit. How do you feel now? How close are you to 100%?
I feel that I'm as close. I'm like right there. I mean, it's like right there. So I'm just looking forward to being able to go out there and show everybody the improvements I made from the season. And by the time the next season rolls around, whatever team I'm picked, I would definitely be able to show them, you know, definitely 100% Corey Wooten.
Hey, Coach Fitzgerald, I wanted to ask you a little bit about another player, your former quarterback, Mike Kafka. Talk about his potential as a starting quarterback down the road. Do you think he can be a starter down the road? I remember watching him a couple of times, and this guy throws a great deep ball, puts a lot of air underneath his passes. What do you think about his potential in the NFL?
Well, I believe his ceiling is pretty high. And, you know, in my infinite wisdom, I only started Mike for 1 year, so that'll show you how smart of a coach that I am. You know, Michael just had a great year. He really had a great career. Another young man that got injured early in his career and had to persevere through that and led our football team this year to a great season. And Mike's got a big arm. He's very accurate, tremendous leader, takes over the offense. Corey will be the first to tell you. Mike's the first to show and last to go kind of guy. I mean, you got to throw him out of the film room. He's great in the weight room, and he just makes everybody around him that much better. And you know, I think he's got all the intangibles, and he's got great fundamentals. I mean, what the coaches kept telling me that came through is fundamentally they have not seen a quarterback like Mike Kafka. His footwork, his mechanics, his arm strength has definitely improved throughout his career, and same thing with his decision-making. So there was a huge buzz about him from the end of our bowl game on. I expect, like Corey, for some really special things to happen for Mike here in the next couple days.
Hey, Corey, I'd like to ask you about a couple of guys that you went up against. If you could, you know, help the fans, help the listeners out there to give us the scouting report. One guy, Brian Bulaga, is, you know, projected to be a top 10 guy, and also Indiana's Roger Saffold, a high riser in this draft. What can you tell us about those two guys and going up against them on the field?
Definitely. Brian Bulaga, he was definitely a great old lineman. I think he might have won the Big Ten lineman of the year, something like that. And he's definitely a really, really strong guy, good run blocker. Iowa always has great run blocking. I thought he did a tremendous job in the pass game as well. And, I mean, that's probably why he's going to be one of the top tackles picked. And then moving on to Roger Saffold, I thought he was someone with really good feet, you know, really good in his pass sets. I thought he took one of the best sets in the Big Ten, at least. And, you know, he's another one that'll probably be, you know, second round guy about. But he's definitely going to be a good player in the NFL.
Hey, Corey, we got somebody in the chat room here, and they wanted me to ask you if you'd like to be a Giant, or at least if you'd like to play close to home being a Jersey guy.
I mean, that would definitely be, you know, amazing to be close, you know, have my family and friends be able to come out on my games. But ultimately, I'd just be happy wherever I'm able to go, you know, whatever the right fit is for me. You know, so wherever it is, whether it's Seattle or, you know, the New York Giants, so whatever team wants to pick me, I'm definitely be honored and privileged to be able to go play for them.
Hey, Corey, what are you going to miss the most about college football, and what are you looking forward to the most in the NFL?
The thing I'm going to miss most is definitely the players and the coaches at Northwestern. I really believe that's what separates, you know, our program from others. You know, the coaches really care about the players, not only on the field, but just in their development as men. And, you know, that's what Coach Fitz and the rest of the coaching staff has done. They made us better, you know, not only on the field, but off the field and everything we do in our relationships, family life, academics. So, and the players as well, you know, those are the guys that you, you know, went to battle with every week, and the lifelong friendships that you'll have. So that's the thing that I'm going to miss the most, being at Northwestern.
Hey, Coach Fitzgerald, you probably heard me speaking to Houston Nutt earlier. And how about you? Are you a big draft guy? Are you somebody that gets up and gets into this? And you know, is it almost like a parent on graduation day watching your guys getting drafted into the NFL?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm actually on my way home right now for a little T-ball game for my 3-year-old, and then I'll get home. And what a great night to call recruits. So I'll be probably watching the draft and talking to recruits there during the May phone call period and talking about how they're going to be the next Corey Wooten and Mike Kafka and Sherrick McManus. And, you know, for us, it's an exciting time. I'm so proud of our young men, and I think what Corey just hit the nail on the head. What separates us is our young men in the locker room and You know, all three of these guys are graduate. They're all graduates of Northwestern, and we may have a couple more guys drafted late, but I think that's what's most important. Hey, it's a special day, but it's just a new beginning and a new chapter in these guys' lives, and they're doing it with a Northwestern degree, so they're prepared for life.
All right, Coach and Corey, thanks a lot for joining us. We definitely want to wish both of you guys a great weekend. Corey, good luck. I'm a New York guy myself, so we wouldn't mind seeing you playing close to home as well.
Sure.
But, you know, good luck to your NFL career regardless of where you end up.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate that.
Thanks,
Coach, thank you
good
as
luck.
Well.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Good luck, Corey. Text me when you find out where you're going, man. Go Cats. Bye-bye.
That's right, go Cats. That's how Coach Fitzgerald always ends up the interviews when he comes on with the good go Cats. Big Northwestern guy, played there as well. Rev, you know, what's your take on Corey and just, you know, all these guys in this draft that are, you know, potential 3-4 type guys, you know, how much do you think that improves their stock, their value, being that so many teams could use a player like this? And, you know, and especially Corey, because he's not just limited to being a 3-4 guy. 4-3 teams might be interested in him, but how much does the fact that every team is interested in him help him in terms of his draft stock and draft value?
Well, yeah, I think it helps him tremendously. I view him as a second-round pick, and if he was 100% healthy, I think it could have definitely been a first-round pick. You know, one thing that he touched on that's key is, you know, in his senior year, because his knee wasn't 100% sound, he couldn't make those, you know, change of direction type moves that he was making in 2008. But if you watch him from that 2008 season as a junior, I mean, this guy had tremendous agility and change of direction skills, was a tremendous pass rusher, and he has the size, as you said, to play that 3-4. But if you put him in a 4-3, this guy could rush the passer. He had 10 sacks in 2008. He's got great pursuit skills. I mean, when you watch this guy move, you would never think that he's 6'7 and 280 pounds. He moves like a guy who's like 6'2, 250.
Rev, how about in general, you know, not necessarily specific to Corey, how much do you think NFL teams should weigh in the injury type thing? You know, how much of that a concern it is? We have, you know, at the top, Sam Bradford, all in the likelihood, we, as far as we know, still probably the number one overall pick, you know, coming off injury as well. How much of a concern is that for you? I think more than any other sport, being durable is like a skill.
Yeah, you know, what would concern me is, look, you play football, you're going to get injured at one point. But if it's one injury and you're recovering from it, that's fine. You know what? I can accept that. But if you're the type of guy who's had multiple injuries, who's had chronic problems that keep recurring, that's when I get a little bit worried. You know, and I'll bring up an example of somebody like that, Montario Hardesty out of Tennessee. Here's a guy who's had already 3 knee surgeries, and the kid, I mean, he's not even a pro yet, so you could just imagine he's had his knees drained before games. So that type of thing would have me concerned a little bit. Maybe I would drop him down because of that on the draft board. But if it's one injury and the guy's showing progress and he's looking strong out there and his workouts are you know, look good and are acceptable, you know, then I can't really knock the guy down too much on my draft board.
Yeah, it's something, though, I think that definitely needs to be, you know, considered and brought up. And you know, it's unfortunate. You don't want to see a guy's stock fall because of that or a guy, you know, not fulfill his potential because of that. But, you know, it is a down-and-dirty game. It's, you know, it's different than other sports. I always kind of bring it up, you know, when the Hall of Fame conversation comes up, you know, that word compiler comes on. And I think it fits maybe in other sports, particularly a baseball, but I think in football it does not fit at all, because I think it's a skill of, hey, if you can have a long career, 10, 11, 12 years, kudos to you. You know, you deserve credit for that. All right, we are ready with our next guest right now. It is head coach Bill Lynch of the Indiana Hoosiers. We just had Coach Fitzgerald on from Northwestern, so we are staying in Big Ten country. Coach Lynch, how are you today, and thanks for joining us.
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight.
Coach, let me start off the bat with your offensive tackle there, Roger Saffold, a really high riser. We like him a lot. I think in our last 2 or 3 mock drafts, we've actually had him going in the first round. Talk a little bit first about the leap he made from his junior season to his senior year.
Well, I tell you, Roger really progressed throughout his career. He came in here and We played him as a true freshman, really probably before he was ready to go, and he was young. He just turned 18 and was about a 250-pound tackle, and I remember I think the first time we started him was over at Illinois. And, you know, he's playing Big Ten football, undersized and young, and but he was a competitor. He got great feet, and he had toughness, but he got better, and then he got better his next year, and we had a good football team, went to a bowl game, and then his junior year, he was solid. He was injured a little bit early, but showed, you know, I mean, he played through it. And then this past year, he had an outstanding season, and now grown into, you know, what he is at 315 pounds or whatever. But so he really progressed throughout his career to the point where, you know, he's in a position where he's possibly the number one draft choice tonight.
Coach, another guy I wanted to ask you about, you know, one particular player who doesn't get the accolades of some of the top defenders in this draft is Jamie Curlew. You know, watching him over the past few years, here's a guy who's very explosive, employs some nice spin moves. He hits you like a torpedo. What's the potential of a player like this, Jamie Curlew, at the next level?
Well, I think Jamie's, you know, you really hit it on the head. He's a high-energy, explosive football player, and a guy of great effort. He made more effort plays in the last 4 years than any guy I can ever remember, where he's running guys down and he's forcing turnovers and just strictly off effort. But he's very physical. He's a great young man. I mean, he's done some things while he was here. I mean, he was one of the top kids in the country. He was on the AFCA All-State Good Works team for all the things he did. Outstanding students, has graduated, studied abroad, worked on campus in the President Obama campaign during the football season. He was out trying to get students to register to vote. I mean, really, one of those guys that's very, very unique. And I know this, he's one of those guys that you would want in your locker room because he's got a leadership and a personality that's really contagious. He's, you know, from an NFL standpoint, you know, I think it depends on the type of team he gets on in terms of what they're doing defensively. Whether he's an outside linebacker, whether he plays with his hand down, I think he'd be an outstanding special teams guy. So whoever ends up with Jamie Curlew is going to get a really good football player.
Hey, Coach, and on the other side, you had another defensive end there who may get drafted, and that's Greg Middleton. His curve has been a little bit different. You know, he had that really big sophomore year, has dealt with some injuries. Talk about him a little bit and his pro potential.
Well, I think he's his potential is unlimited. He's a prototype defensive end in terms of his size, his strength, and he's got great get-off. As a pass rusher, he's got great hands, strength, where he can get his hands on offensive tackles, and that's part of, you know, his strength. He has battled, you know, some things throughout his career. Numbers-wise, his sophomore year was big, but really he's played really solid football the last couple of years. I think he kind of came on the scene as a sophomore, and some of the people didn't know who he was. Certainly as his career went on, everybody knew where he was lined up and was going to make sure that they got their protection kicked to him. But I think, again, he's a guy that in the right system can be an outstanding pass rusher because he's got certainly has the physical skills everybody's looking for.
Hey, Coach, I wanted to ask you about one of your current players, and what do you expect out of your running back of in this upcoming season, Darius Willis, a guy who has tremendous burst, a lot of speed. What do you expect out of Willis for the new year?
Well, you're right. He's got great potential, and he was slowed a little bit this spring with some injuries. In fact, he had his ankle scoped right at the end. It was one of those things that was kind of bothering him through the off season, and felt like we could wait till spring ball was over. He didn't quite make it, but he'll be full speed by the fall. But he's a big physical kid that's got great speed, and he's had some big runs last year in some big games, but he's a good pass blocker. He's a good receiver. He's really a complete back, and you know, he's just going into his sophomore year. So if he makes the same progress this year as he did, you know, going into his freshman year, we should have a heck of a back this year.
Hey, Coach, I got one more guy I really want to ask you about, and that's somebody that maybe we as well as other people have been a little late to jump on the bandwagon, but that's linebacker Matt Mayberry, who really impressed in the pro day. What's his potential and upside moving forward?
Well, Matt, you know, he's got really good size and speed. He has got for a linebacker, his speed is outstanding, which I think certainly makes him a great prospect as a special teams player as well as a linebacker. You know, he's good in pass coverage. He was a tailback in high school, so he's one of those guys converted and really learned how to play linebacker on the run. But by the time, you know, he got done playing for us last fall, I thought he was a complete linebacker. And with his size and strength and speed, his upside is there because he hasn't played linebacker all that long.
And before we let you go, Coach, tell us a little bit about what this week is like for you and how cool it is to watch your guys go in there. We just had Coach Fitzgerald on. I'm going to ask you the same question. You know, is it almost like a parent seeing their kid graduate from school when your players get selected by the NFL?
Oh, absolutely, because we all know how hard these kids work, and it's a dream of theirs when they come in. And to watch them progress, and particularly a kid like, you know, you mentioned Saffold to get started, or Mayberry that, you know, we just talked about that, you know, really were a little undersized and came in under the radar, but they work so hard, and you know, these kids work 12 months a year now, and there is no off season, and they've put themselves in a position where they're going to get to play in the NFL. So really proud of them, and, you know, just wish them the best. And, it's you know, it's nerve-wracking for these kids, you know, talking to them this week because they just don't know, you know, where they're going to end up. But it's something that they've, you know, worked a long time for, and happy for them and their families.
All right, Coach, thank you very much for joining us, and we want to wish you luck moving forward as well as to all the Hoosiers that are looking to go into the NFL this weekend.
Thank you very much, guys.
All right, thank you.
That's Coach Bill Lynch of the Indiana Hoosiers, and we are going to keep it rolling and moving here on the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Preview Show. Remember, go to NFLDraftBible.com. You can still order that PDF and get it right now before the draft gets underway. But coming up next, we will have cornerback Kyle Wilson and his brother Jerry Wilson. And that is the Boise fight song. Kyle, Jerry, how you guys doing? Thanks for joining us today on this special draft day.
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
All right, let me start out. I got to ask you guys, let me start with Jerry first. Jerry, where is the bus, and is it retired yet, or is it still moving?
No, the bus is in Boise right now. I actually left it out there. There's a big draft party going on, so... You know, Kyle's back here in New Jersey, but, you know, the presence is still there in Boise.
All right, good to see. So, Kyle, you're in Jersey. Jerry, you in Jersey as well? You guys are back home?
We both are back here.
All right, that's cool. It's good to have you back home. Rev, I'll throw it to you.
I'm going to start off with Jerry. You know, when did you first discover that your brother was such a gifted athlete when you were growing up with him?
Well, I mean, you know, Kyle is 9 years younger than me, and, you know, we've watched him ever since he was, I guess, 7 playing Pop Warner. And, you know, the first time he ever touched the ball, it was 80-yard touchdown. And at that point, you know, we knew that there was something special. And, you know, just watching him, you know, grow and play at every single level, he's excelled. Regardless of, you know, what the stage is. And I would say relatively early on, we knew that it was going to be special, and then it was just solidified from high school moving forward.
Yeah, and Kyle, are you looking forward to going face-to-face with some of those gigantic receivers you have in the NFL, like a Calvin Johnson or a Vincent Jackson from San Diego, Randy Moss, guys who are like 6'5"? You know, as a cornerback, how would you cover a guy who's 6'5" differently from, you know, a quick slot guy who's a little bit smaller?
You just play to your strengths. You watch enough film on them. You see what they're good at, and you see what they need to work on. So you can get physical with them, or you can be more patient and, you know, don't touch them. But probably want to mix it up and not give them the same look every time. Some of the smaller guys, you might be more aggressive with them. You might have to be a lot more patient with them because they're a lot quicker and, you know, have better change of direction. So just, you know, just a combination of mixing it up, playing to your strengths as well as, you know, capitalizing off things they need to work on as well.
Hey, Kyle, let me ask you, when did you realize that, you know, a day like today where you're expected to be a first-round guy and you're getting ready for the draft, when did you realize that, one, you could play at the next level and you could make a living playing football, and, two, when did you realize that, hey, not only could I get drafted, but, I should be a first-round pick?
Put it this way, it's no surprise to me. You know, it's the only dream I ever had. It's all I ever wanted to do. So I just, you know, each year you just set new goals to get to that step, and, you know, you just go out there and achieve them. I mean, it's not, you know, rocket science. You need to make plays on the field, and you need to set some goals in college if you plan on getting to the NFL. So, you know, I did exactly that, and, you know, put myself in this position I am today.
Hey, Jerry, let me ask you, who's more nervous right now, you or Kyle?
My dad.
What's Daddy Wilson doing now then? What's he doing?
I think he's actually pacing. You know, we're just getting everything set up. The ESPN crew got here and, you know, they set the cameras up in the basement where we'll be watching the draft. And, you know, we have friends and family coming in from all over the place. So it's getting about to get pretty hectic.
How many people in total are you guys hosting there?
We don't really know. Maybe 50 to 100, but, you know, for us, this is a culmination of, you know, like Kyle always says, 22 years of work. And so everyone who's ever had a part in this, you know, will be here. So that number will probably be much greater than what we anticipate, no matter what I tell you.
Yeah, I mean, do you have to check IDs at the door, make sure, you know, people aren't trying to sneak in claiming they're a long-lost cousin or something?
Well, I think we'll be able to figure that out pretty easily. You know, it's just a great experience, and, you know, we're happy to share it with whoever, you know, has been a part of Kyle's success, you know, over the course of his career.
Hey, Jerry, we had Kyle on a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned that he was a big Deion Sanders fan growing up. As a fan, where do you hope to see your brother go?
I just hope that, you know, he can go to a team where he can learn and really develop his craft and, you know, be the, you know, Pro Bowler that he plans on being. And, you know, I can't really say where, you know, we'd like him to play, just in a program that, you know, he can really develop himself to be, you know, one of the elite corners in the NFL.
And going back to Kyle, you know, during this long off season, how have you become a better athlete? And what have you learned about yourself?
It's just been pretty tough, you know, traveling to these different teams over the last few weeks. So just trying the best shape I can so, you know, you can head into mini camp healthy and be ready to make plays. But, you know, just noticing, you know, different styles and techniques that these NFL teams use and, you know, really just the different schematics that they play with and how it kind of caters to your game. So, you know, different teams look at different film and, you know, just view things different. So it was nice to get a lot of different perspectives. I think it was very positive that, you know, just got a lot of compliments on the different styles and techniques that we played at Boise State University. So it was all very positive, and it was, you know, nice to get that feedback.
Yeah, and on the field, Kyle, are you much of a trash talker? And how do you handle wide receivers that talk a lot of junk?
Oh, I say I talk my fair share of game. But I do it, you know, to get in their head. I need those guys to be worrying about me, not what they're supposed to be doing. So, you know, whatever it takes. But, you know, I'm from New Jersey, and, you know, whatever we say, we got to back it up. So it's, you know, just part of growing up out here, and it's, you know, it's second nature to me.
Well, for sure, you definitely got to represent. I know Kyle's a humble guy, so I'm going to ask this question to Jerry. Jerry, who is the best corner in the 2010 draft?
Well, I think that's the same person as who was the best corner in the 2009 draft who didn't declare. I'm really serious.
Did you have a thinking that maybe Kyle should have gone? Talk about that decision a little bit, going back a year to come back for his senior year.
Well, I think, education is a very, strong point in our family. Everyone except Kyle has a master's degree. That's really important. But I think for Kyle, going to Boise State, you can win everything, but, people always kind of discredit things. And so coming back for a senior year, he could really put a stamp on things, as you said, develop his game. It's the small details that really differentiate someone from being a great corner to being an elite corner. And I think, being able to come back for a senior year, go undefeated, win the Fiesta Bowl again, play against, top competition like Oregon and succeed, is really just an example of, what's taken place, as I mentioned before, ever since the Pop Warner time. Whatever level it is, Kyle's been a winner, and, in the last 8 years, he's only lost 7 games.
Hey, Colin, on the same path, not necessarily that you improved your game, but you improved your style, got your name out there a little more. Your brother was talking about the senior year. How about the off season, where you really showed what you could do both in the Senior Bowl and the combine and the pro day process?
I thought that stuff was a lot of fun. Going to that stuff and playing against some of the guys you see on TV, which was the biggest joy for me, just meeting those guys. But, going out there, they really made a big deal out of the stuff I do every day in practice, which is just making plays. So I don't know what those guys were so surprised about, but that's just, what I do on a regular. And, it's a lot of fun for me. So, I think that definitely helped out just to discredit some of the skeptics about competition and things like that. But it was a lot of fun, and I credit a lot of that to the success that's going on as of recently.
Kyle, I had one more for you. Throughout this whole process of preparing for the draft, have you spoken to anyone, any current NFL players recently, and what are they telling you to prepare for?
I just spoke to Darryl Green earlier. Just giving advice, enjoy the whole moment. Don't hide from it. It's a great moment in your life. After this, just shut it down and, go to work. So it was, one thing of just enjoying the moment, but understand, what's coming after that and don't enjoy it too long. So it was, definitely some humbling advice and, I greatly accepted it.
The Wilson brothers, Kyle and Jerry Wilson, thank you very much for joining us. Wish you luck. Enjoy the day. Enjoy the time there on this special day, once-in-a-lifetime experience. Thank you very much, Kyle. As a big brother myself, I will throw out there, don't let Jerry fool you. He's more nervous than you are, no doubt about it.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
All right, that is Kyle Wilson from Boise State, who we expect to be a first-round pick and one of the top cornerbacks in this draft, with his brother Jerry, who's been a big part of this process. Rev, the cornerback position in general, I mean, the depth is just amazing. I almost feel like, does the depth almost hurt people? Because if you have other needs, teams might say, hey, I can grab a pretty good corner in the second or third round. Or are there guys, has a Kyle Wilson, a Devin McCourty, a Joe Hayden, distinguish themselves enough, maybe a Kareem Jackson, to ensure themselves of being first-round guys?
Well, I think that when you're talking about the elite cornerbacks, and I definitely include Kyle Wilson among that group, and, Joe Hayden is another elite guy. When you're talking about elite guys with elite skills, I mean, those guys at the cornerback position, they're always going to get picked early, and there's always a need. And, right now, with the way the game is played, there is even more of a need right now for cornerbacks than there was, 10, 20, 25 years ago. You see more multiple receiver sets, and, with the way they call the game right now, it favors the offense. And so with a lot more passing going on, you need guys who can run. You need guys who can cover, guys who can play man-to-man, and guys that can play in multiple schemes, guys who are tough, guys who are physical. And if you get somebody that can give you all of those traits in one package, I mean, he's a first-round pick. And that's why I think Kyle Wilson is definitely a first-round pick. And, heck, I think he's a top 15 guy. I'm not saying he's going to go that high, but he has that type of talent. And when you talk about Joe Hayden, you know, here's another top 10, top 15 guy. So, yeah, to me, if you're a special player, I mean, I don't think that hurts you. You know, for guys that, you know, fall in that second level, that second tier, yeah, they could fall a little bit because there are so many great athletes available out there at that position.
It's interesting you mentioned that, Rev. This is something that I've been asked a couple times. Is it possible that Kyle may be the first corner off the board? I mean, what's the gap between him and a Hayden, and how much has Kyle closed that, let's say, from the end of the college season to this point?
Yeah, I do think they're very close, and a lot of times it comes to, you know, as you always say, Dan, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. You know, if a certain team thinks that Kyle, you know, maybe if they need a press corner, you know, and I think Kyle is probably the best press corner in this draft. So if you need that type of player, then you just might, you know, put Kyle Wilson ahead of Hayden on your draft board. If you take a look at overall skills, then somebody might go with a Joe Hayden, who, you know, gives you a cocktail, a variety of different qualities about him as a player. So, you know, I think they are very close.
All right, folks, you are listening to the NFL Draft Bible's draft preview show here on All Access Football Radio. Thank you for joining us. So far, we have gone through a multitude of guests, including head coaches Houston Nutt from Ole Miss, Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern, and Bill Lynch from the University of Indiana to talk about their guys. We have also been joined by Kyle Wilson, who was just on the air, as well as Corey Wooten. Wilson looks like a surefire first-round pick. Wooten, I think, would be a very solid second-round pick. I would be surprised to see him slip any lower. Also, Trevell Gaines from Gaines Performance, one of the top trainers in the industry, has been with us. So if you're just joining us now, go back, listen to the archive before the draft gets started. And if you still need a draft guide, go to NFLDraftBible.com right now. You can pick that up immediately. Get the download the PDF and have it ready for you when the draft starts. So it's still not too late. Go get that draft guide right now. The draft Bible coming up. We still have a few big guests coming up. We also have Carlton Mitchell, wide receiver from South Florida, another guy we project to be a second-round pick, a high riser. Dari Noka from ESPN, as well as our very own Rick Saratella, who is on location at the NFL Draft Bible. And one of our scouts, Ben Klein, will also join us to talk a little bit about the first round. Rev, let's stay with this cornerback position and talk to me a little bit about some of the second-tier guys you may like out there, you know, beyond the first-round picks. You know, even throw in a Kareem Jackson, who could be a first-round pick. I know you like Patrick Robinson a lot. Brandon G is a player who's helped himself as well during this process. Looked very good at the combine. Talk to me about some of the guys who could go in the second round of this draft from that corner position.
Well, you know, one guy who I think is a borderline late first round, early to mid second round type of player is Kareem Jackson out of Alabama. We actually had him on last week. And, you know, this is a guy who, I mean, this is my, like, ideal type of cornerback. He's a guy who's athletic, but a guy who can hit, a guy who is physical, a guy who's not afraid of hitting you in the mouth. But a guy who's also been well-coached, you know, Nick Saban, he is a genius when it comes to coaching defensive backs. That is his forte. So not only are you getting a guy who is rough and physical, but a guy who is very well-versed in a variety of different schemes, a guy who's going to be able to pick up the playbook. And then you mentioned Patrick Robinson. Now, here's an interesting guy when you talk about foot speed and quickness. I mean, this guy is second to none. But, you know, what really worries me about Patrick Robinson is his effort. It's not consistent. You know, from one game to the next, he can either look like a superstar or he'll look like a bum. So Patrick Robinson is a guy who is maybe, I don't know what you want to call him, a high-maintenance type of guy that you have to stay on top of. You have to coach him up. You have to make sure that he's motivated. But, you know, if he gets in the right setting with the right types of players around him, I think Patrick Robinson has the athletic skills to flourish at the next level. And then you bring up a guy like Brandon G. I think this is a guy who's got elite skills in terms of, man-to-man coverage. But the thing is that he's got to improve his ball skills. and he only had one interception in his entire collegiate career, so he has to improve on that, and he also needs to be a more consistent player. But I think, again, you know, this guy, much like Patrick Robinson, is a guy that you take in the second round and that has those skills and has that upside to be a terrific corner down the road.
All right, Rev, I just got a text from Darryl Washington. I believe he's going to call in any minute. Talk a little bit about Darryl and his former college teammate, Jerry Hughes. I know a couple of guys that you're pretty high on, and it seems like you always find a way to get one of them in the first round of your mock drafts.
Yeah, well, talk about Washington very quickly. You know, here's a guy who gives you solid sideline to sideline ability. He's got good size. He's 6'2". He's a little light, though. He's only about 230 pounds. You know, I think that whoever takes him will probably ask him to put on about 10 to 15 more pounds. But, you know, he's a very intelligent player. He's not one of those, you know, fast physical guys that just relies on his athleticism. He's a guy that actually thinks out there. He knows what's going on in front of him. He reads. He anticipates. He doesn't over-pursue plays. So I think this is a guy who is going to make a very, very nice and smooth transition into the NFL. And then, you know, Jerry Hughes is another guy who's very intriguing. He's a hell-raising edge rusher that can sack the quarterback, and he always looks to force fumbles. But, you know, the most surprising thing that I saw with Jerry Hughes, you know, was during the combine when they asked him, you know, to play the linebacker position and drop back into coverage. And he looked very natural, very fluid in his back pedal. He kept his head down. His technique was solid. So, you know, that just tells you that if a 3-4 team drafts Jerry Hughes, I think he would be able to adapt to that type of scheme.
And without further ado, I will bring on Mr. Darryl Washington from TCU. Darryl, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, sir. How about yourself?
Pretty good. I'm excited, man. It's draft day. It's like Christmas for me. We love this stuff. I know you're a big football guy. You were listening a little bit there as Ralph gave his analysis on Jerry Hughes. What do you think? Was he on the ball?
I think he was perfect. He was perfect. So I think that really defines who Jerry Hughes is and what kind of person he is and what kind of player he is.
And, Darryl, first, I got to ask you, how's the haircut? Did it come out okay?
Yeah, it's looking good. It's looking good for the night. So, you know, I have to make sure I get that done first and foremost.
You got to make sure in case you're expecting to get on the cameras potentially tonight sometime?
You know, you have to expect anything. So I just have to make sure I get it right.
So how excited are you right now? I mean, it's 6:12 Eastern time. We are 1 hour and 18 minutes away from the start of the draft. You know, how excited are you? How nervous are you right now at this moment?
Well, I'm not nervous at all. I mean, you know, it's football and, you know, this is what I love to do. And, you know, this is the moment I've been waiting for. And, you know, I'm excited and more relaxed than nervous. So just looking forward to it and, you know, just to hear my name called and to get ready to work.
That's the kind of cool customer you want playing in a big pressure game. You know, he's not nervous at all. Bring it on, right? Let's get ready to go. So where are you going to be watching the draft? Who are you going to be with?
I'll be with my family and some close friends. So we'll all get together and, you know, just celebrate and, you know, just wait patiently.
And what? Let me ask you, what do you think of this format here? You know, being a guy like yourself, I mean, we have you slotted as being a potential late first round, early second round guy. What does this primetime thing kind of do to you now? Depending on where you may fall. Do you like this format?
Well, I like the format. You know, you can never, you know, I'm glad y'all got me slotted in that spot. You know, I think I have the first round potential and, you know, hopefully my name gets called in the first round and I'll be excited and I know my family will be as well. So I'm just looking forward to it.
Hey, Darryl, just tell us very quickly, you know, what do you offer as a linebacker that makes you a special player at your position and makes you, I guess, a better player than a lot of the average linebackers out there available in this draft? You know, talk to us about, you know, what are some of your outstanding characteristics?
Well, I mean, one thing you have to understand is, you know, I have a high passion for the game of football and as well as a high IQ of the game. And I think just versatility and speed and, you know, just making plays and, And then also bringing leadership to a team that, whether it's a good defense, whether it's a bad defense, but just bringing that production to a team and it making them even better. And I think that's what I bring to the table. And, you know, just hard work and commitment to winning a Super Bowl.
Hey, Daryl, I was going to ask you something. You know, we've asked a couple of the guys. I'm going to steal one of Ralph's questions. What do you think you're going to miss most about college now that, you know, once you hear your name called, you're officially part of the NFL?
Wow. I was just talking to my position coach, and, you know, I'm just going to miss being out there with those guys and, you know, a great group of seniors and, you know, just a, you know, just the whole place about TCU has definitely just opened up the arms to me. So I definitely miss everything about TCU, but, you know, just being on that field and playing with those guys and talking to those guys, you know, I really miss that.
How about looking forward? What are you planning on doing with that first paycheck you get? Anything you're looking forward to do? Maybe get yourself a nice shiny new car or something for Mom? What do you think?
Well, we're going to take care of Mom. Take care of Mom first. I think, you know, that's my motivation. And, you know, this is what I, you know, I came to this point. So I'm going to take care of Mom and make sure she's okay and make sure his family is good. And we'll figure out what's next.
All right, Daryl, thanks a lot, buddy, for coming on. I know you like to talk football, and one time we're going to definitely have you on for an extended period and talk a little more and dive into it, but this is our draft preview show. We're rolling with a bunch of guests. Daryl, thanks a lot, really, for giving us a couple of minutes on this important weekend for yourself, and we want to wish you all the luck.
All right, thank you, sir. No problem.
All right, break a leg. All right, and that is Daryl Washington, the outside linebacker from TCU, the former Horned Frog. We expect him, as I said, you know, he's a guy that potentially could go late in the first round, maybe a second-round type pick, but definitely somebody that should hear his name called in the next day or two. And another player who we expect to get his name called in the next day or two is wide receiver Carlton Mitchell out of the University of South Florida. Carlton is with us right now as well. Hey, Carlton, how's it going?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Pretty good, Carlton. Thanks for joining us here. As I said, it's a you know, big weekend for you guys. We really appreciate you taking out some time during this busy schedule that you have. Carlton, you know, how you feeling right now? I asked Jerry this a couple of minutes ago. You know, we're getting closer and closer to the draft. It's a little over an hour away. You know, how you feeling? Are you nervous? Are you excited?
Actually, I'm very excited. You know, I'm kind of afraid because I'm not nervous at all. But, you know, I just realized at this point I've done everything I could. You know, I've done everything to put myself in the best position. And wherever I get drafted, you know, that's, you know, it is what it is at this point because that's where God wants me to be at. That's where I'm going to go. So I'm not really worried about the draft at all.
Hey, Carlton, Ralph here. You're a tough guy with deep speed. What makes you a unique and special receiver compared to all those other wideouts in the draft?
I consider myself to be a full-time player as on the field. You know, I'm not just, you know, I'm very consistent running past, you know, defensive backs on the field, like going deep and all. But at the same time, you know, in the blocking game, I take a lot of pride in that. And, you know, you never want your man to get in the pile. I'll never want to get minuses. And at the same time, you know, like I always tell people, I love to get the ball 100 times a game. But, you know, whatever coach needs me to do, you know, go across the middle to set something up or, you know, have a mismatch going to slot to set something up with a safety, you know, I'm down for that because, man, I'm just trying to win games.
Hey, Carlton, let me ask you about your ability to stretch the field. I think that's something that really does separate you a lot from many of the receivers in this draft. You know, not only do you have a great speed, but you also have good size to complement it. Not many guys can do that. Talk about that a little bit.
You know, guys blessed me with some pretty decent speed, you know, and just being able to, you know, just pretty much learn the game and just understand coverages in certain windows. As soon as I catch the ball, I pretty much know where everyone's going to be at, where I'm going to be at. So just taking advantage of my speed and my size as soon as I catch the ball, you know, it's been helping out a tremendous amount and just understanding placements or, like, for different guys on the field. That's definitely been a lot of help
throughout
my season. Hello?
Yeah, Carlton. Also, yeah, Carlton, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Yeah, yeah. Also, what are some of the names that people throw out when they watch you play? You have a lot of people comparing you to Brandon Marshall?
Yeah, I heard that a few times. Brandon Marshall, some guys, you know, talk about Reggie Wayne at first when I was, I think my redshirt freshman year. And there's another receiver my position coach compared me to a while ago. I forgot it was an old school receiver. I don't remember.
Were there any receivers that you grew up really rooting for and kind of emulated?
You know, to tell the truth, the receiver I watched most, that I paid most attention to was Jerry Rice, you know, because his work ethic. You know, he wasn't the fastest receiver, but, you know, pretty much every coach I spoke with, he has a Jerry Rice story, and each story, like, it inspires me, and it's something I want to try to, that I will mirror the next level, because, you know, he was very successful in the things he's done. His work ethic got him a long way. But as far as, you know, me playing on the field, you know, I try to take a little bit from each player, from Brandon Marshall, you know, Deshaun Jackson even, and Larry Fitzgerald, Reggie Wayne, just certain things they do, you know, that helps them, like their game. I try to steal a little bit from each player to elevate my game.
Well, what's the most motivating Jerry Rice story then that you've heard?
I just heard one just recent how, you know, Jerry Rice used to, he normally shows up 3 hours before every game. He done that his whole career. He showed up 3 hours before every game. He goes out, he does a workout, you know, he does red zone stuff, and he runs around every 10 yards, goes to the other end of the end zone, you know, does stuff in that red zone, and then after that he goes in, he showers, and he comes out with a team, warms up again, and just doing stuff like that. I know for a fact it was have a strong mind. You know, he's a very strong-minded person, and, you know, just going out and just being the best of shape, like, that he is, you know, it's just, that's an amazing story. They say he does that every game, and as a coach that sat there, he showed up 6 hours before a game, just, you know, to make sure that if that rumor was true. And sure enough, here comes Jerry Rice, and he came out, and it was amazing, he told me, and just something like that just inspires me a lot, and just to move on and just try to be the best at the next level.
Yeah, also, Carlton, you know, what are some of the things that you've been working on during the off season to make yourself a better athlete? How do you think you've improved yourself athletically?
Athletically, there's a lot of things I've been working on. You know, I'm not a complete receiver yet. I don't think I'll ever be a complete receiver, but at the same time, you know, just working on, you know, getting on the jug machines, catching balls, you know, plucking away from my frame, and, you know, turning around, locating the ball, and then going over doing a few cone drills, you know, sinking my hips, you know, creating separation, you know, stuff like that, and just pretty much working on footwork and just a lot of ball drills. And at this point, just getting in shape and working on flexibility.
All right, Carlton, thank you very much for joining us during this big weekend. Enjoy the draft week, and hopefully you'll end up where you want to fall.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Anytime, Carlton. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right, as we keep moving on here on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline, we're going to go from guest to guest. You're listening to the NFL Draft Bible Draft Preview Show here on All Access Football Radio. Don't forget to go to NFLDraftBible.com right now. Get that PDF. It's not too late. It's 1 hour and 8 minutes until the draft starts. Hurry up and get it, and it'll be right there in front of you, right on your laptop. You can download the PDF, and you'll be ready for the first pick of the draft. And the first pick of the draft, I believe, is going to be from Oklahoma, and as is our next guest, Mr. Dari Noka from ESPN, a Boomer Sooner himself. Dari, how's it going?
Good, guys. How you doing, man? How you doing, Dan? Good?
I'm listening to you.
You got guests all over the place, man. It's good.
We're trying to compete with this big company called ESPN. You know, they do a good job, so we're trying to hold our own.
Who was that again? I've never heard of them.
So, Dari, you know, what do you think about the Sooners heading into this draft? It looks like we got, you know, potentially three guys going in the top 10.
Yeah, who'd have known, right, from an 8-win team last year, huh? Well, how about that? Yeah, of course, they wouldn't have been 8 wins had that most likely number one pick been starting quarterback. You know what? Here's the thing. It's great for the school. I mean, I'm really excited to see where they go. I mean, there's a chance that you get three of the top four potentially. I mean, best case scenario, Trent Williams goes four. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities. But I will say this: I know Sam. I really like Sam. I like him as a kid. I think he is absolutely the best quarterback in the draft. But if you're the Rams and you need a ton of help, how do you not start and go inside out? Like, isn't that the NFL recipe for success? How do you pass on Ndamukong Suh? I don't get it. I think about half the teams, or 20 to maybe 15 to 20 teams in the NFL would not pass on him and would take him first, if not more than that. But the Rams, I know they need a quarterback. I know they do. But who cannot use a game-changing defensive tackle? Have you ever seen, I don't know, I'll tell you, I've never watched, you know, you watch football, and if there's an electrifying player on the field, you sometimes tend to focus your vision on that particular player, and you say, you know what, I'm going to watch this kid, I'm going to watch this guy for the length, the duration of the play. I've never done that with a defensive lineman like I do in Ndamukong Suh. I can't take my eyes off the kid. I cannot take my eyes off the kid. He's that much of a game changer. While I love Sam, and I mean, I'd love to see him go number one, I just think if you're a team like that that needs so many different things, and it's a safer pick than a quarterback anyways, how do you pass up Ndamukong Suh? I don't, that's where I'm struggling right now if I'm the Rams.
Hey, Dari, I agree with you 100%, but I'm here in New York City. Are they going to let you back in Oklahoma? You're lobbying for a Nebraska Cornhusker?
Hey, man, I tell you what. You know you know this. College football in Oklahoma and Nebraska, those are that's a rivalry that is really based on, I think, respect more than anything else. There's really no hatred. Now, maybe the younger fans have some dislike between the two schools, but, man, I mean, I grew up rooting for Nebraska, you know, 10 or 11 times a year, just not when they played Oklahoma, and I think a lot of Nebraskans did the same thing. I worked in Nebraska for 2 years. I covered Nebraska. My wife's a Nebraska girl, so I do. I do root for Nebraska a little bit, but more than that, I am amazed watching tape of Ndamukong Suh. He's an absolute game changer, and I think he's really difficult to pass up. I mean, he may be the best linebacker that's come out in 10, 12 years. I mean, the best line, you know, the best defensive lineman, certainly the best defensive tackle that's come out in that long. So, boy, I have a hard time passing him up. If they get Bradford, you know what? Great. I think he's clearly the best quarterback. His accuracy is unlike anybody I've seen in college football. He can do it throwing, running to his left and make those great throws. He can do it running to his right making great throws. But you still never know about a quarterback. You never know about the injury. You never know about durability. Is the shoulder going to be 100%? You can't miss with – I just don't think you can miss with Suh. And he's a quality kid. He's a great – not that Bradford isn't, because he is too. But, you know, you sometimes wonder about defensive tackles or maybe, you know, the only thing that could hold back a lot of time. You know, defensive tackles and defensive linemen, offensive linemen, generally a safer pick. And you say, assuming this is a good kid, assuming his head's on straight, there's no question about Ndamukong Suh, his head's on straight. So you go with a defensive lineman, which can change an entire defense and change the way that an offense attacks you, and you know that he's a solid kid like this, I just think it's hard to pass him up.
Yeah, we are here at the NFL Draft Bible. We're doing our draft preview show. On the line right now is Dari Noka from ESPN. Coming up next, we have running back Jonathan Dwyer from Georgia Tech. Ralph, I'll throw it back to you.
Yeah, Dari, you're preaching to the choir about Ndamukong Suh. I mean, you know, people are comparing his raw strength to that of the late Reggie White. And and to me, when I'm looking at a quarterback, unless he is the next, I think he's the next John Elway or the next Dan Marino, you know, I'm not going to take him with that first pick overall because, you know, as you mentioned, that is the hardest position to fill, a quarterback. But I wanted to ask you about Trent Williams out of Oklahoma, the offensive tackle who's been shooting up the boards. And actually, some people have him going over Russell Okung. How do you view Trent Williams? Do you think that he is a legitimate left tackle at the next level? You think he's ready to be a left tackle at the next level? Or would you go with the Russell Okung over him?
Oh, boy, I tell you, man, I think there's a reason that in mock drafts you see one over the other as frequently as you see the other over one. You know what I mean? I think that, honest to goodness, those are both NFL-caliber tackles. I think that Trent showed a lot of maturity when, after two seasons ago, he could have gone to the NFL, could have been a top-five pick, and decided to come back and play again. He anchored a young offensive line that lost every starter but him. So I think from that aspect, look, there's nothing he can't do in terms of protection, pass, or run. There's nothing he cannot do. And then you show that the leadership that he obviously had to show last season, and again, anchoring a line that had nobody else back. I think that is maybe something that people see in Trent. You know, Okung's a great lineman too. So I don't honestly know. I'm not a scout. I don't know who I would take above the other one, but I think that those are both can't miss type alignment.
All right, Dari, I got one quick one before we let you go because we got Jonathan Dwyer waiting on the line to come on.
Don't make him wait for me, man.
Quickly, what do you think about Jermaine Gresham and his potential? You've seen Keith Jackson coming out of
sure.
OU. How good can Gresham be?
I don't know. You got anything against 6'6 guys with hands and speed? I'm good with that. I think I could throw to him. Right?
Sounds good, right?
You're gonna be on
ESPN News, right, during the draft?
Yeah, we're doing a 3.5-hour draft special, basically. Mike Hill and I and Eric Allen, Kadri Ismail, Dan Jeremiah, former NFL scout, Joe Shad. I mean, we're blowing this thing up. So if you're watching ESPN in the draft, just know that over on ESPN News, we're going to be having a lot of kids. We're going to do interviews with a lot of these guys as soon as they're taken. We've got reporters all over the NFL, all over these cities. So we'll be all over it, too.
So, in other words, you're saying if we're tired of Mel Kiper and Chris Berman, switch over to the other station.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that. You did. But, yes, I'll agree.
All right, Dari. Thanks a lot for joining us, and hopefully we can get you on again to talk a little more football.
All right, guys. Take care.
And that was Dari Noka from ESPN. And we're moving along here right now, and we will bring on Mr. Jonathan Dwyer from the Rambling Wreck of Georgia Tech. Thank you for waiting on the line, JD. How's it going, my man?
It's going good. Just sitting and waiting to see what happens, you know, for everybody else and for myself.
So how excited are you? You know, we're getting closer and closer here, 1 hour away from the start of the draft. When they announce the first pick, what are you going to be doing?
I don't know. I'm gonna be happy for, you know, all the guys that I know that are getting drafted. And of course, you know, when I hear my name called, I'm going to be ecstatic, and, you know, I'm going to be around my family and loved ones, so it's going to be a great time to be all around them.
Yeah, JD, I wanted to ask you, you've been a durable guy throughout your college days. You never missed a game. Is that just by luck, or is it by design? Is it because of your hard work? Talk to us about that.
I mean, what you put in, you know, what you put in is what you get out. You know, that's something I've been taught ever since I was a kid. You know, if you want to, you know, perform to the best of your ability, you got to work hard to, you know, to get to where you want to be, and just take care of yourself. You know, I take care of my body. It's a, you know, for you to make it, you know, for me to be the player I want to be, I have to really take care of my body. To me, being physical and, you know, you blocking and things like that, things I like, you know, it's part of my game. I have to, you know, have durability, be able to take the hits and be able to, you know, deliver hits and, you know, just have a, you know, ever since I have a high tolerance of pain, so nothing really bothers me too much. As long as I can walk, I'll play. So that's just, you know, me being tough and hardworking and putting, you know, doing the extra little things to make sure my body's together.
Okay, and did you always want to be a running back growing up? And, you know, who were some of the guys you admired as a kid growing up in Marietta?
Like, you know, Eric Dickerson, Walter Payton, Emmitt Smith, and then, you know, as the years went on, for Adrian Peterson and LT.
Oh, some good names there.
Yeah, I was actually a big Eric Dickerson fan myself. I mean, JD, what did you like best? Did you like the Jerry curls, the goggles, the big mouthpiece? What did you like best about Eric Dickerson's little flair there that he had?
Well, I mean, he had the big mouthpiece. I've always worn that mouthpiece ever since I was a kid, and I'll probably continue to wear those because I like those the best. But probably just the fact that he was a bigger back, you know. And during that time period, there's a lot of smaller guys and things like that. So he was the first tall back that was in the league. So it was just the fact that, you know, he was a bigger back like myself, and you know, just the way his running style is. He had, you know, a long stride, which I have, and you know, this is the way he played. I like the way he was very smooth and athletic, had a real good vision, and just, you know, punish people if they're in his way.
So no love for the Jerry curls then, huh? No temptation to go in that direction yourself?
Nah, definitely no temptation to go that way. I mean, it was hot back then when he was playing. It was definitely the hairstyle.
No soul glow anymore. I think we got we that era is over then. JD, yeah. Who are you going to be? Who are you excited about, you know, in terms of your buddies, you know, guys, either your former teammates like Bebe, Mr. Demaryius Thomas, or C.J. Spiller? How excited are you as a fan, in addition to being that you're going to be drafted, but watching guys that you're friendly with going high in the first round?
I think it's, you know, the fact that, you know, all, I mean, this is what, you know, what we play for. This is what, you know, all the hard work we've done ever since we were kids and, you know, went to high school. We reached our goal of playing college ball, and now we reached our goal of, you know, getting to play in the NFL. So, I mean, I'm really happy for everybody, you know, that has the opportunity of playing, that is in my shoes. You know, I have, you know, high respect for everybody who's going to be drafted and excited for them. And, you know, definitely excited for my own teammates, the guys that, you know, I worked hard with to get to this point. So the guys that we push each other to get to where we're at today. And, you know, of course, you know, CJ, since we built a relationship this past season, and, I'm happy for everybody. So I hope everybody enjoys their time with their families and enjoys the experience.
You know, JD, when I was a couple days ago, I got a chance to speak to a few people, and Eric Berry brought up a good point to me that I hadn't really thought of. He said it's really cool to talk to each other in terms of, you know, future draftee guys, because really only you guys can relate to each other. You know, Eric was saying how if you go home, you talk to your friends, they really don't know what you're going through and what you're experiencing. Everybody just thinks, hey, I wish I was you. I wish I was getting drafted. Talk about how it does help to talk to those former teammates and the other guys you've made friendships with to kind of get you through this whole process.
I mean, because, I mean, that's, you know, that's where you actually be a kid, you know. I mean, the fact that, you know, all of us, you know, half of us came out of, half the guys that's in this class are underclassmen. So it's the fact that, you know, you have someone to go to. You know, not a lot of my friends, you know, some of them play sports, some of them don't. But, you know, some of them aren't in the same position that I'm in right now. So it's just the fact of having someone, you know, some guys that you know since you were in Georgia, especially guys that are from Georgia, and guys that you meet along the way that are playing, that you play college ball, it's someone that you can relate to, someone that, you know, you can talk to about anything through the process, and they can, you know, give them their, you know, idea of what you could do, and it goes likewise to both ways. So, I mean, and just like Eric of EB said, you know, you have guys that you go back to your homeboys and you talk to them, you know, they're thinking, you know, you're living a life, you're having, you know, you, everything should be a cakewalk for you, but, you know, no, they don't understand how, you know, nerve-wracking this process can be, and know how enjoyable it can be. So it's kind of, you know, 50-50 on how the process could be, but, you know, none of your friends that don't understand what you're going through really can't give you the best advice like someone who is.
Well, yeah, you've met up with a lot of coaches, and I imagine that you've also met up with a lot of current NFL or ex-NFL players. You know, what are the older guys telling you? What type of advice are they giving you?
You know, the fact, you know, the thing is that, you know, it's not about, you know, the fact that, you know, it's all the whole draft process, you know, it's all about getting drafted. That's the whole thing, is getting on a team. And once you're on the team, it's pretty much about playing ball after that. You know, it doesn't matter where you get drafted, what round. I mean, of course it matters money-wise, but, I mean, all matters is your second contract. That's the biggest thing more than anything. It's about the second contract, about working hard and getting to that second contract. And, you know, being a productive player and making sure that team doesn't waste their time you don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be that bust. You don't want to be, you know, the guy that everybody says that they think that you're going to be. So you always want to prove everybody wrong once you get to that, you know, that point of your life.
Well, do you have any idea of where you're going to be taken, or where do you want to go? Where do you want to be drafted? Do you have any idea, any expectations?
I mean, my expectations, of course, is, you know, to be a first-round draft pick. You know, it doesn't matter what part of it is. Is it first, mid, late? You know, it would be great to be, you know, done after tonight. But, you know, if God's plan is for me to be a second-round guy, third-round guy, or whatnot, you know, that's what his plan is for me. But hopefully it gets done tonight. And, but man, I don't care who it is, as long as I hear my name called. I mean, I'm a fan. I'm playing for whoever that team is.
Hey, JD, one last one before we let you go. You mentioned getting that contract, and once you get picked, do you have anything in mind, a nice big purchase you're going to have with that first paycheck?
I don't know, probably just take care of my family in a special way. Maybe set up a vacation time for when I have that little bitty time before the season starts.
Sounds good. JD, thanks a lot for being patient with us and waiting on the line and coming on. We definitely want to wish you luck. Hopefully you'll get your name called tonight, but if not, you know, we definitely believe you'll be called tomorrow and you will have a successful career either way, I think.
Thank you. God bless, man.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
All right, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
And that is Jonathan Dwyer from the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. And in case you're joining us just now, you're listening to the NFL Draft Bibles Draft Preview Show. We've had on head coaches Houston Nutt from Ole Miss, Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern, and Bill Lynch from Indiana, as well as defensive end Corey Wooten, also from Northwestern, corner Kyle Wilson from Boise State, running back Jonathan Dwyer of Georgia Tech, wideout Carlton Mitchell of South Florida, and TCU's Darryl Washington, as well as Dari Noka from ESPN, Travell Gaines from Performance Gains, and up next on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline is our very own Big Ben Klein, the one Big Ben without any trouble. Ben, how's it going today?
It's going well, going well. Keeping my nose clean.
We may have to change that moniker. You know, we don't want to give you a bad reputation.
Yeah, just to remind people it's after a clock tower.
Yeah, so Ben, you know, we were actually talking about this at the top of the show with Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, if you're running the organization, I mean, do you trade this guy even if they offer you a top 10 or even a top 5 pick? You know, do you trade a guy who's only 28 years old, has two Super Bowl rings under his belt? You know, how do you let go of a guy like this at a position where it's very hard to find franchise players?
Yes, it is. But if you're the Steelers, and they're in a unique position amongst NFL franchises, it would be them and the Giants, and I can't think of any other franchises that could be considered in terms of the old school values they have, the fact that they've had one owner, one family ownership. I mean, married to Rooney, the actress Kate Mara is a daughter of both of them. So they're just the two classiest franchises in the NFL. So when you're talking about the two of them, it's different from the other franchises. They won four Super Bowls before Ben Roethlisberger got there, and after him, they're probably going to win more Super Bowls because they have of the organizational structure that flows down from the ownership. And because of that, I personally, if I was Pittsburgh, because of what I stand for, I would consider very strongly trading him.
Well,
he's that,
you know, I mean, yeah, I hear you. It is very embarrassing, and, you know, he's had multiple incidents now, 3 years in a row, as a matter of fact. But, you know, you mentioned that, you know, they won Super Bowls without him, but, you know, in between those Super Bowls, they've had quarterbacks like, you know, Mark Malone, Bubby Brister, you know, Mike Tomczak, Neil O'Donnell. So,
don't
forget Cordell. Cordell Stewart, right. So what I'm saying is, you know, I mean, it's so very hard to find that type of quarterback who could be your leader for the next 10 years, for the next 8 years. You know, be, you know, not only a quarterback, but as I said, a leader, a guy who's the face of your franchise. And I know, look, it's embarrassing to have a guy who acts this way be your face of the franchise, but I'm just saying, look, if you expect Byron Leftwich to step in and lead you to the promised land, that's not happening. This guy,
I don't know
if he could last four games. And Charlie Batch is even worse when it comes to durability. And then Dennis Dixon, I mean, you know, he looked okay in one game last year versus the Ravens, but he's still a project in my eyes. So
About Colt McCoy or Jimmy Clausen, you know what I mean? Like, you could gab one of those guys this year. I mean, I know it's, compared to Roethlisberger, they're nothing. But, I mean, this is also based from an opinion of mine. And I've run scouting reports on Roethlisberger for years, and I think he's a Pro Bowl player. I think he's an exceptional talent, but I think that people are a little bit too high on him. He's a little overrated, in my opinion, and he always has been. I've heard too many whispers throughout the years of him being in Pittsburgh about, A, his teammates not liking him. Like, if you go back and look at team MVP, even during his best seasons, they always voted somebody else team MVP. They just don't like him, his teammates. I've also heard whispers that he doesn't work very hard, that he falls asleep during team meetings. I mean, I've heard, then there's the motorcycle incident. Then there's all these rape allegations. And then there's the fact that when you actually watch him play football, I don't know if he actually knows the playbook or not. I think he's just playing backyard football. I mean, on a three-step drop, he's holding on to the ball for 7 seconds. I mean, sometimes I think he thinks he gets paid per second that he holds on to the football. You know, the longer he holds on to it, the more money he's somehow going to make. So, I mean, he's a winner, but he's in such a great situation where they run the football and they play defense. If he was in a situation like almost any other franchise in the NFL, I don't know if he'd be this kind of a winner. I just don't. It's not like Eli Manning, where I actually feel like you could put him on any franchise in the NFL and he'd win. Same thing for Philip Rivers. I think you could put him pretty much anywhere, except for Buffalo, where it's really windy. I think you could put him anywhere and he'd win. I don't know if you can say the same thing about
I hear
Rob
you, Ben. I hear you, Ben, but let's be honest. Philip Rivers hasn't won yet, and I guess Eli Manning could win everywhere if he had a miracle catch on the way to the game-winning drive. But let's leave the debate for now for that quarterback class, and let's talk about a little more about the 2010 draft class.
Absolutely.
Ben, I think when you look at, you know, Sam Bradford, Sue McCoy, Russell Okung, who am I missing here? Trent Williams. There's, you know, Eric Berry. There's about 7 guys that are locks to be top 10 guys. Who's somebody you think that maybe we don't hear a lot about being a top 10 guy that you think should be a lock top 10 guy?
Earl Thomas. Everyone's talking about him. He's generating a lot of hype. And I think he's going to be gone in the low teens or like 11, 12. He could be gone around there because I think the Eagles and the Cowboys are going to get into a bidding war over who can trade up the highest to get him. But I think Earl Thomas is just such a solid player. And also C.J. Spiller. I think the two of them are like in the neck and neck tie for two players who deserves to be picked in the top 10, who may or may not be. They're just both such talented players. They both love the game. They do everything right on film. They say everything right off the field. They're obsessed with football. They're gym rats. They're film junkies. There's just almost nothing negative that you could say about those two guys.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with you on Colt McCoy, but I do agree with you on Earl Thomas and C.J. Spiller. I love both of those guys. Ben, number 7, if Berry's not there and you're the Cleveland Browns, you really want a safety. Do you pull the trigger and take Earl Thomas there?
Absolutely. I would feel more comfortable with Earl Thomas than Joe Hayden or Kyle Wilson. Not to say I don't like those players, but if I had to choose between the three of them, I'm going Earl Thomas the whole way. He's that good to me. Like, I think he would be far and away the best safety prospect in this year's draft if it wasn't for Eric Berry. And Eric Berry might be the best safety prospect of all time. So that's why Thomas isn't getting the kind of hype he really deserves, is because Eric Berry is a black hole of safety. He just sucks all attention towards him.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more there. I'm a big fan of both of those guys. And C.J. Spiller, I believe Rick Sartella, our founder, is on the line. We'll get him on in a second to jump in on this conversation. I think C.J. Spiller is such a dynamic guy. I mean, such a big play guy. Usually these players get overhyped. Why isn't C.J. Spiller getting more hype? Why isn't he a lock, sure, top 10 pick?
Because he's a little bit smaller than a lot of teams would like. A lot of teams still think that they want to grab a bell cow, a workhorse, even though that concept doesn't really exist in today's NFL. Another reason is while he was durable, he played a ton of games, and he only missed one, I think, his entire career. But you saw him on the sideline a lot limping. And, you know, toe, quad, glute, whatever. And another reason is his size. I mean, and the fact that also he doesn't generate a ton of hype. He's not he was a 4-year player. He didn't come out his junior year. He came out, he stayed the whole time. He's not a look at me screaming for attention kind of guy. He just, I mean, I don't know how he does it, but he manages to fly under the radar.
All right, Ben, thanks a lot for joining us on this NFL draft day one, first round, prime time, first time ever. Hopefully we'll get you on for a couple minutes tomorrow where we can recap a little bit and get your thoughts on how you thought the first round shakedown.
Absolutely, and everyone check out the website tomorrow. I'll have a second round mock draft after today's first round.
That's right. We're really looking forward to that. That's almost like a first, you know, it's like a second first round. We get it all over again as if, you know, it's Groundhog Day, but with fresh new material.
Uh-huh.
You know, a football fan, there's nothing else you could want more. And we're coming on next, bringing on our man, I believe, Mr. S, Mr. Rick Saratella from Radio City. Rick, is that you?
It is I. I found a landline here to dial in. As always, it seems every year, Radio City, we have always internet and phone issues.
It's always fun, isn't it? It's always fun stuff there. Rick, give us the vibe. What's the feel there in Radio City as we're approaching the start of the NFL draft, just 40 minutes away right now?
I mean, it's the calm before the storm right now. You know, people are still settling into their chairs. You know, I just hit up the buffet line, ran into Jay Glazer, no news there. And you know, John Clayton's over here. The thundering blurb is on my right, tells me that the Seahawks now are trying to trade down. And it's really the calm before the storm. There's really nothing doing right now except for the buffet line for the media.
Yeah, me and Ralph talked about this at the top of the show. Really, no action today. What's the deal? What do you think happened to cause all, you know, so many rumors but no action at all?
The NFL moved the draft to primetime. I mean, the overhype, it's like, you know, watching the NFL Network and ESPN today, I just thought it was a bit much. And just the excessiveness. I don't need a six-hour pregame show for the NFL draft. I just had a four-month pregame show.
Hey, Rick, Ralph here. You know, you're hearing about a lot of guys that are, you know, shooting up the draft boards. You know, Brandon Graham, you know, a guy that we had as a top 20, top 25 guy, is now being talked about as a possible maybe even top 10 or top 15 guy. Linval Joseph is a guy that, you know, some people are projecting to be San Diego's first-round pick. Who are some of the guys that are moving up the draft board?
Well, I think Linval Joseph is a bit of a stretch just because he's a stiff body to have in the middle, and I just think there's so many other talented guys. I think he's getting a lot of hype just because a lot of these tackles, both offensively and defensively, are going to be off the board. They're going to be off the board quick, and that means guys like Roger Saffold, one of these small school tackles I see sliding into the back end of the first round. I think Tyson Alualu is a guy that's going to go somewhere in the 15 to 25 range. I think Mike Iupati, a lot of people are talking about him as a top 10 selection. Don't rule out, you know, the Oakland Raiders or even the San Francisco 49ers with their first pick. So, you know, I think Colt McCoy and Tim Tebow, because of the product of this new draft day format, I think teams will trade into the back end of the first round and snag a Tim Tebow and Colt McCoy. And, you know, one of the things you're hearing now is Tebow may actually go before Jimmy Clausen.
So if Tebow gets drafted in the first round, is he going to pull a what's the basketball player's name? I can't remember now. The high school kid. Is he going to show up at Radio City after he gets picked?
Well, you know, I think they have a TV crew in his living room, so I guess, you know, he'll dictate when they can roll on the cameras. But, you know, Brady Quinn can attest to this, that those green line, those green room sunbeams tend to get hot after about 20 picks or so.
Yeah, Rick, and, you know, we just talked about some of the late risers. One guy that's going in the opposite direction, and people are finally listening to us, is Taylor Mays. You know, they're talking about him going to the late first round. You even see him maybe dropping down to the second round.
Well, I know the Eagles are looking. They're in the market for free safety. If they don't trade up and get Earl Thomas, I think Taylor Mays could be a possible destination there. I think the Saints at 32 would have to consider him. And really, you know, other than that, I don't see a real good fit for Taylor Mays. So, you know, Bruce Campbell's another guy that can go. He can go in the top 15 or he can go in the second round. You know, there's some funny players like that, so it'll be interesting to see. You know, I think the running back situation is also one to keep an eye for. I think Javid Best or even a Jonathan Dwyer might even sneak into that first round. If Houston goes Ryan Matthews, don't be surprised if San Diego pulls an upset with like a Jonathan Dwyer.
I know wide receiver is another position, Rick, where you think a couple of guys may sneak into late part of the first round. After Dez Bryant, well, first let me ask you, where do you think Dez Bryant could go? Where is his stock at this point in time? And who are some other wide receivers that could sneak into the first round?
I think Dallas is really a good destination for Dez Bryant. I think Jerry Jones would be intrigued with adding Dez Bryant to the Dallas Cowboys. And I know that he would be willing to trade up to do that, but I'm looking at where they are at, and I think they may not even need to trade up for Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant may be on the board when their pick comes up. I think Demaryius Thomas, you take a look at the Indianapolis Colts, a team that really doesn't have a major area of need, but a team that kind of struggled at wide receiver last year, in my opinion. They lost Marvin Harrison. Reggie Wayne was all banged up. He's shown some wear and tear. And let's be honest, you don't want to lean on the Pierre Garçons and the Austin Collies of the world, you know, week in and week out. So Demaryius Thomas is kind of a roll of the dice that I think fits well with the Indianapolis Colts. I like Golden Tate at the top of round two to Tampa Bay.
And Rick, you know, we talked a little bit about Upati, the guard, and how he's shooting up boards. How about the top center in this draft, Marquise Pouncey? How high could he go?
You know, Pouncey and Jermaine Gresham were the two toughest guys I had slotting into the first round. And, you know, I think Pouncey will go somewhere in that 15 to 25 range. If he does sneak into the latter part of the first round, I think Minnesota is a possible destination. And Indianapolis, again, that would be a team I would think that has to jump on Pouncey. But he's a tough guy to project, in my opinion. I mean, I could see him going as high as the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, Rick, a key player here is going to be the New England Patriots, I think, with all the picks they have. You know, I can definitely see them with all the picks that they have today and throughout the weekend, maybe going for some skill position guys. You know, I could see them even going for a Dez Bryant if he falls to them, and maybe in the second round going for a Dexter McCluster. You know, what do you expect out of New England? You know, do you think that they're going to trade any of their picks, or you think they're going to stand pat and actually take advantage of the wealth that they have and maybe even take a chance on some, you know, big, high-profile skill position guys?
Yeah, I think Bill Belichick played his cards really well because he looked ahead and he saw how strong this draft was, and he prepared for it, and he's got 3 second-round picks. And I think he's going to be looking to do some damage. I think he's going to be looking to trade up, trade down, and collect picks again for next year. And I've had McCluster pegged to them with their first pick in the second round for a while now. They have so many needs on the defensive side of the ball, but I saw one mock draft that had them pegged for Jermaine Gresham in the first round, and I think they are going to be looking to add some weapons, and a guy like Jermaine Gresham would be great, but they do have so many needs on the defensive side of the ball. I find it hard to believe they would pass up a Sergio Kindle if he was on the board, and maybe even somebody on that interior or exterior on the defensive front. I mean, they have such an aging defense. I think they need to fill that in the first round, and I think 2 out of the 3 picks in the second round may be weapons. They may even sneak up into the back end of the first round and get a guy if they're targeting.
Hey, Rick, before we let you go, I got one more question for you. Is it too late to order the NFL Draft Bible?
It is not too late. You can still get your PDF download now. And I will email that to you personally, 321 pages of the goodness. And then we also have the post-draft PDF coming out in about a week. We're going to recap everything. We're going to do some fantasy football impact and analysis. You know, Merry Christmas, fellas.
All right, Rick, thanks a lot for joining us there live from Radio City. And we'll definitely have you on again to break down day one and kind of give us the feel of day two there in this new format of the NFL draft.
Yep, we'll break it all down again tomorrow, and I'll have a landline ready to go. I'll call on time, I promise.
No problem. We'll see you later at the draft party, baby. Right.
Yep, you got it. After party, Mean Fiddler, NYC style.
And that was our founder, Rick Saratel, here as we wind down. 1 minute left to go in our show. In case you missed the beginning of the show, you got to go back, check out all the great guests we had on, players, coaches, members of the media. Also, go to NFL Draft Bible right now. As Rick said, you can still purchase the guide. You will get it in your email, and you will get it in time to watch the 2010 NFL Draft. Also, we have a multitude of podcasts on. I was able to meet with a bunch of guys in person in New York City in our Green Room series, including Eric Berry, Brandon G., Rob Gronkowski, Demaryius Thomas, Joe Hayden, Trent Williams, and Lamar Houston, a bunch of players who we're going to hear their name called not only today, but, you know, some of them tomorrow, first-round picks, second-round picks, all of those guys. You can listen to those one-on-ones we were able to do this week in New York City as they prepare for the NFL draft. Folks, thanks a lot for being with us today. It was a blast. Hopefully we'll have you guys on again tomorrow as we do another draft preview show. We have a show tomorrow at 4 o'clock to 5:30, leading you up to day two. Some of the special guests we have lined up for tomorrow, wide receiver Eric Decker, nose tackle Terrell Troop out of South Central Florida, Montario Hardesty, the running back from Tennessee, Earl Mitchell, defensive tackle from Arizona, James Starks from Buffalo, as well as our draft family and Richard Wood, former USC Trojan College Football Hall of Famer. He'll be on with us as well to talk about some of the Trojans in this draft, and he's living down in Tampa, so he's going to break down some USF guys as well. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the draft, folks, in prime time. Talk to you tomorrow.